May 27th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And I'm Pam Vidor.
And we are back again for Chapter 6 of A Study in Scarlet, the very first Sherlock Holmes novel from 1887. Chapter 6, we are deep into this mystery, and we get a little bit of a respite because this is a soap opera.
did it strike you that it would be super easy to put this chapter on as a play
or like
musical?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because so you have four scenes. So scene one, Sherlock and Watson, I'm picturing them in armchairs. It's a super domestic scene. They're reading the newspaper. Maybe you have a little classical music in the background. And then scene two, the Baker Street Irregulars. They arrive, they do their thing, they leave. They're like, it's a musical. Like, they would have some cool hip hop. Scene three, Gregson arrives. He's super pompous. I don't know what music you would give Gregson.
Pompous music. What's the most pompous? I'm really deep organ. Like, I'm here to tell you all about this mystery.
No, he solved it. He's just super confident.
Okay.
Super confident.
Oh, and yeah.
The final scene, Lestrade arrives with his big announcement. Drop the curtain. Like, it's a really fun chapter. At least that's how I felt about it. What did you guys think?
I'm with you. I think you hit all the beats of it because it is sort of, everybody kind of, we're getting a few more touches. We're still being introduced to things. The Baker Street Irregulars are introduced here. And then, Gregson, of course, has solved it all. And as we're going to see, Holmes is certainly amused by this.
Well, and I love the chapter title. These chapter titles are funny. Chapter 6, Tobias Gregson shows what he can do, which is not that much.
So is this Steve Martin or Steve Carell, Steve?
So for me, I think this is more a Steve Carell than a Steve Martin character. I think Steve Martin would be much more silly. His degree of not being self-aware, I see where you're going with that, but I think this is a Steve Carell degree of not being self-aware. He thinks he knows what's going on, and he's explaining it to Sherlock Holmes, of all people.
I think he got it.
And of course, he's completely wrong. So his great reveal is that he's a very bad detective.
Yeah, we've got the Steve Carell sitcom Space Force coming up this week. And I think that this Gregson character might be very similar to the Steve Carell character in that particular program. We'll see.
All right. So my mind has just gone away. The Office UK. Who is that guy? Ricky.
Gervais.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to say Ricky Gervais. In fact, that's even a better one to play Gregson. Although he's not good looking enough. But this idea of just sort of feeling like he owns the material and then just, talk about it.
All right. I can see that. We're going to cast this entire melodrama, the four scene play that is Chapter 6. It opens with the newspapers. And here's what I think Chapter 6 is all about. I think it's all about perspective. We're seeing this case from four different directions here. The newspapers seem to think that this is much more of a political intrigue crime here.
Well, and I actually was really, really struck by the way that each newspaper has its own agenda, right? And so the Daily Telegraph thinks that socialists in America are probably responsible. And it mentions a lot of other foreigners. And I like how the article concluded by admonishing the government and advocating a closer watch over foreigners in England. And then the Daily Standard, quote, commented upon the fact that lawless outrages of the sort usually occurred under a liberal administration. And the Daily News, quote, observed that there was no doubt as to the crime being a political one. And so these three different newspapers, I think you're totally right, have three completely different perspectives on the crime, and they're shown as fitting with each newspaper's political agenda, having nothing to do with, I don't know, truth?
Newspapers and news reporting not having anything to do with truth. This is new. I'm glad we don't have that today. I'm glad that the newspapers are so reliable today, and their perspectives don't change the way that they report a major crime like a murder.
Well, CNN and Fox seem to be have their match back in the late 1800s, right?
Fair and balanced.
But no, but this is the thing, and I feel like this is super, this is one of the reasons I think it's so important to read novels and to just like immerse yourself in novels from a different time, is that sometimes we think, oh my goodness, we've never been so divided as we are today. Well, you know, there was the Civil War. Oh my goodness, the news has never been so extreme as it is today. Well, actually, a lot of things just go around, come around. A lot of patterns in society are actually recurring. Just that idea of one newspaper that advocates a closer watch over the foreigners in England. No, that's the kind of thing you can hear in different parts of the world at different times.
Get off my lawn!
Yep. We find some more clues in this crime. Mr. Drebber, who is the dead person in our mystery, he was seen staying at a house in Torquay with his private secretary, Mr. Joseph Stangerson. And there's quite a story there that they had been staying there for about 3 weeks. Of course it was Torquay. Of course. That's where you stay when you go to visit England, because that's the English Riviera. And we get from the landlady quite a description of who this guy was. The landlady noticed that they had been to Copenhagen, Denmark, before that. Drebber is yet another example of the problems with alcohol consumption. There certainly seems to be something that Doyle is telling us here. It says, he was coarse in his habits and brutish in his ways. The very night of his arrival, he became very much the worse for drink. And indeed, after 12 o'clock in the day, he could hardly ever be said to be sober. His manners toward the maidservants were disgustingly free and familiar. Worst of all, he speedily assumed the same attitude toward my daughter Alice and spoke to her more than once in a way which, fortunately, she is too innocent to understand. On one occasion, he actually seized her in his arms and embraced her, and outrage which caused his own secretary to reproach him for his unmanly conduct. This is a bad guy here.
Is he related to Weinstein by chance? I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, there's certainly some bad action that this man is taking, especially towards women, especially after drinking.
The hashtag #MeToo wasn't then, was it?
Again, very little changes, does it? But right. Yes. We certainly have gone, hopefully, to the other side of not allowing such things to happen now. I hope. God, I hope.
Right. Well, but this is one of the things that Doyle is saying in the 1880s, is like, this behavior is not acceptable. Doesn't mean it's not common, but it's not acceptable. And he is getting in on that, again, first wave of feminism that's really trying to, you know, spotlight the problems of this kind of behavior. Now, I would also note, remember in the last chapter that Watson was at the beginning of the chapter a little bit conflicted, because just from looking at the dead guy's face, he knew that he was a bad guy.
Baboon face, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And so it turns out like that is actually accurate, that like you can look at someone's face and tell what kind of person they are. Does get proven to be correct in this case.
Well, he came from a bad family. We'll learn that later, right? No,
he's an American because he's from Cleveland. That's why. We're getting all this story from the landlady secondhand from Gregson. Gregson is the one who came into Sherlock's rooms and gives us all this news. So that's where the title of the chapter comes from. Tobias Gregson shows us what he can do, because he's the one who's reporting all this. And Sherlock certainly doesn't think that any of this information is applicable to the case. Sherlock is making fun of Gregson here. He says, it's quite exciting, with a yawn. What happened next?
But of course, Gregson doesn't notice. He's like, okay, here's what happened next. quote, he was much excited and evidently the worse for drink. He forced his way into the room where I was sitting with my daughter, this is the mom talking, and made some incoherent remark about having missed his train. He then turned to Alice and before my very face proposed to her that she should fly with him. You are of age, he said, and there is no law to stop you. I have money enough and to spare. Never mind the old girl here, but come along with me now, straight away. You shall live like a princess. Poor Alice was so frightened that she shrunk away from him, but he caught her by the wrist and endeavored to draw her towards the door. I screamed, and at that moment, my son Arthur came into the room. What happened then, I do not know. I heard oaths and the confused sounds of a scuffle. I was too terrified to raise my head. So,
well, that certainly doesn't make you feel comfortable.
Certainly a plot point. We certainly have a possible murder suspect here in Arthur, this son who comes into this scene and sees his sister being manhandled, and there's a scuffle, there's an argument that might lead to a murder.
So thinks Tobias Gregson. And right. That's exactly who he has in custody at this point, is Arthur.
Mm-hmm. But we also have this secretary who is quite possibly a suspect here too, because he doesn't seem to be encouraging this activity.
I'm going to go back real quickly because we mentioned that Holmes was yawning. He was like, oh, tell us more. Holmes, throughout this entire presentation, is not, I mean, he's mocking him. I don't know if the officer knows that he's being mocked, but he knows he's wrong. I mean, Holmes knows he's wrong. But anyway, he's going to allow him to continue. Have a cigar, have some whiskey and water. Tell us more about your outlandish thoughts on this.
And one of the reasons that Holmes knows he is wrong is because of his own little group, his own little detective force on the side, which is, of course, the Baker Street Irregulars. Now, how did you like meeting these guys?
Well, it sounds like they need soap and water because how they described them.
The dirty little urchins, yeah. That's their cover so that they can go anywhere in London and not be seen. Nobody notices the little kid who's running around because he's homeless, basically, and nobody notices.
And the hidden racism in the comments, because you never see that. No, I don't think it's hidden.
No. No, it is definitely not hidden. There's certainly that idea of these kids are foreigners and they should not be allowed in our city. And there's certainly some racism.
We'll just chalk it up to it was of its time. We're not condoning it.
Well, that's good that we don't have racism now. That's good.
Another thing that's totally disappeared with time.
It has. I mean, how amazing is that?
But you guys, one of the things about the Baker Street Irregulars is that this really shows who Sherlock Holmes is, right? And so the detective figure in Holmes and later is a liminal figure. This is someone who can move between different spaces, who sits at the intersections of class, of race, of gender, who can talk to people of all walks of life really comfortably. And so even though Holmes is always awkward in his conversations, he's also gets things done. And he understands that these kids on the street are way more effective than Gregson or Lestrade, right? For the reasons that you just stated, Steve, because they can be anywhere and they don't even get noticed. I have to say, going back to this story, going back to this early novel, I love the Baker Street Irregulars. I miss them. They didn't show up as much in the short stories as I always think they will.
Yeah, but now that we know that they're there, we can really go back to the short stories and think, oh, they are probably being utilized more often than Doyle tells us in the text, because this is the way Sherlock conducts these investigations. He might sit in his chair in his room and contemplate the case, but he might be sending out these Baker Street Irregulars to actually do the investigation.
That's a really good point. Just like Moriarty has his spider web, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Holmes has his. Yeah, that's a really good point.
And I'm thinking along the lines of like Our Gang, Little Rascals, mm-hmm. that type of stuff. The kids just running around the streets. They're not really noticed. But they certainly they certainly can be observed.
I'm thinking a lot more of Oliver Twist. And yes. Here we have Sherlock being the Fagin, the adult who commands this team of urchins running around the streets. He calls them the Baker Street Division of the Detective Police Force, which, again, he is leading them. He says they are sharp as needles, too. All they want is organization. He's the ringleader of these kids. I love that idea of Fagin in my head.
I really like that.
And he pays them.
And he's keeping them. You know, fed, keeping, he cares for them in his own Sherlock Holmesian way, but he is the leader of this group.
And I love when they come in and they're all like dirty and ragged and just kind of, you can hear how loud they would be. "Attention," cried Holmes in a sharp tone. And the six dirty scoundrels stood in line like so many disreputable statuettes. Oh, I like that. The disreputable statuettes, right? Then the notion that they come to attention for Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm. And maybe only for Sherlock Holmes. Maybe if there was a police officer, they would not do that same thing. They might disrespect the authority of a police officer, but not Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
So we get this picture of Drebler from all of these different perspectives. He's a card player. He's a scoundrel. He's a mean drunk. He's inappropriate at minimum with women. And he's, of course, an American. We haven't gotten to, was there a description of him being loud? I think that there was a loud somewhere.
I bet he wears tennis shoes and white socks, too.
And he's really tall. You can point him out in a crowd.
Well, you know, all those unlikable attributes are right there on display.
Then Lestrade enters and he gives his perspective, which is completely different from anything that we've heard throughout the entire chapter.
And this brings us to the ending of the chapter. So Lestrade says, "This is a most extraordinary case, a most incomprehensible affair." "Ah, you find it so, Mr. Lestrade," cried Gregson triumphantly. "I thought you would come to that conclusion. Have you managed to find the secretary, Mr. Joseph Stangerson?" "The secretary, Mr. Joseph Stangerson," said Lestrade gravely, "was murdered at Halliday's private hotel about 6 o'clock this morning."
Dun, dun, dun.
Right?
Right? This is such the melodrama. That's the last words of this chapter is, nope, that guy's no longer on our suspect list. He's been murdered too.
And probably Arthur, who's been in police custody, maybe didn't kill the secretary. Just a guess, Mr. Gregson.
Let me have the cigar back. Give me the whiskey and water back. Come back when you have some real information. Wink, wink, wink.
You are dismissed, sir. I said good day. Great.
Certainly. We get this a whole chapter of this build-up. Well, we get introduced to the kids, but we get a whole chapter of like, oh, it's been solved. Well, Holmes says he's solved it, but we get Gregson. And then, of course, Lestrade's like, well, I didn't mean to break your spirit, young man, but
here's what's going on. All perspectives, all interesting. I love how Doyle is putting this together. A young author who's really got a really great writing style here. I am excited for chapter 7 tomorrow.
And once again, you can see the hook of why Sherlock Holmes immediately was a sensation. This is an Indiana Jones character. This is a Luke Skywalker type of character. It's one that captivates a large group of people.
A Dashiell Hammett, a Columbo. Oh, sorry. I always go to Columbo. Columbo's my favorite, I guess, of all the details.
He's not Kojak. He's not Rockford from Rockford Files.
Rockford Files. There you go. I do love James Garner. Okay. And, so anyway...
No, but I mean, I'm really glad you say all that because it's right. Sherlock Holmes is really a foundational detective for all the detectives that we continue to like today. And in reading this early story, we can see exactly why.
Yeah, right from the beginning. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Hope you're enjoying it out there. Hope you're listening along. Hope you're reading along. We are going to get to chapter 7 tomorrow. We're almost, would that be halfway through this mystery? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Light in the Darkness.
How intriguing. If you have questions, you have comments, you have artwork you want to share, please hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes on all your social media posts. Send us an email, send us a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. And you can always visit our dedicated Holmes website, sandwiches at irregularhours.com, for all of these conversations that we've had. This is conversation number 61, by the way, episode 61 of Pam and the Two Schmucks. It's been wonderful.
Well, yeah, the COVID, the COVID-19 is almost over. I mean, we only have what, another year, two, three more to go.
18 months, my friends.
So we'll do it one story at a time, one chapter at a time. We'll get through this together. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflaw.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
Where's my sandwich? What I want to talk about. What I want to thank you for, what I want to